This is the McKinsey Podcast, where we help you make sense out of our world's toughest business challenges.
Welcome to the show. I'm Lucia Raheli.
And I'm Roberta Fassara. Worker productivity is down and labor costs are going up. McKinsey senior partner Aaron DeSmet says the costs associated with both of these trends are substantial.
So there's been a lot of research out there on when an employee is less engaged, what is the productivity effect of that, and what is the knock-on effect in terms of what it costs an employer, either in opportunity costs or in actual costs because you have to hire more workers because you're not getting the productivity out of the ones you have. No matter what assumptions you pick, the cost is big. It's very big.
Aaron's right. McKinsey research shows that employee disengagement and attrition could cost the average S&P 500 company millions, like a minimum of $228 million a year. There are ways to boost productivity, though, if you know who's being productive and who's not. McKinsey partner Angelica Reich joins me and Aaron to discuss a few different employee types, from the quitters to the thriving stars. Angelica, Aaron, thanks so much for being on the podcast today.
Great to be here.
Thanks for inviting us.
So we're in this new world of work now, where we've got hybrid and remote models, and managers are struggling to figure out who's being productive and who isn't. Angelica, Aaron, you and colleagues at McKinsey have done some research trying to provide more insight or some sort of way of thinking differently about employee productivity. What did that research reveal?
It revealed quite a lot. The first question we had is, if we survey employees and ask, how are you doing? How are you performing? How are you feeling? Would they be honest? And the variability in responses we got suggests to us that they are being honest. Like, we got some real interesting data everywhere from, I am not performing at my job. And quite a few others who said, I am doing a lot at work. I'm really doing well. And everywhere in between. So across multiple countries, a survey of over 15,000 employees illuminates a lot what people wonder is going on. And a lot of the fears are real. So I think there's a lot we can learn from this data.
Angelica, anything to add there?
The number of people that are disengaged, strongly or mildly disengaged, but still in the organization, is quite large. And that bears a high risk for productivity if organizations don't take action.
The first set of workers that would love to discuss here are the quitters, and they sort of comprise about 10% of a typical organization. Tell us a little bit more about these workers. How would you describe them?
The quitters are people who are the least satisfied in the organization and the least committed.
Yeah.
And that's why they are actually planning to quit. We did see that there is also a group of people in this archetype that are actually being pulled away because they're great performers and they've been offered a better place to go. So when looking at that group, it's important to think about it in two ways. The portion of them that is being pushed away because they're just dissatisfied and they want to get out, and the portion of this group that's being pulled away to something better. And when taking action, yeah, it's important to look at those two things separately and also to think about who are the ones we would want to keep in the organization because they're high performers, and who are the ones we would actually like to actively manage out.
So Angelica, if they're high performing, what can companies do to re-engage them?
It starts with the basics, yeah, to say a good compensation package, thinking about whether there is a possibility to offer them a change of responsibilities, a great career path. But we do see that it's even more important also for managers to really be personally involved and connected with top performers that they want to keep in the organization. We see in some of our additional research that relationships with management explains a majority of people's interpersonal experience and their commitment to work.
I wanted to add one thing. The landscape and the war for talent has changed. And what I mean by that is the barrier for a high performing professional or manager to leave one company and go to another has lowered. The barrier is just lower. It's lower for a bunch of reasons. One reason is it used to be that typically if you were going to move companies, you would be asked to relocate. Now, a lot of companies are saying, no, you don't, you might have to travel a bit, but you don't have to relocate. You don't have to move and move your family to come work here. You know, going from one to two to three employers over the course of a couple of years, there used to be a stigma attached to that. What's wrong with that person that they can't keep a job? That stigma is largely gone. And so for a number of reasons, the barriers are lower. And because of that, the war for talent has heated up. People are saying, hey, if I'm not happy here, it doesn't take much for me to start looking around and maybe try another employer. And if it doesn't work out, I'll quit again. And so the level of quitting for high performers is just higher. And I'm not sure it's going to go down.
Aaron, how do you identify the quitters in particular? Because there's this whole phenomenon of quiet quitting where people are just sort of, you know, going along to get along. And I wonder if they're just hard to see.
They are a bit harder to see because a lot of our management tools and practices were evolved in an in-person work environment. And now that most work environments are much more hybrid, it's a lot easier for the quiet quitters to hide. One of the ways to find them is to look for them. Ask people, have a conversation, have an authentic conversation where you check in and you see, how are you doing? Are you productive? Are you satisfied? Are you engaged? In most cases, not in all, in a few exceptions, people will lie and not give you the honest answer. In many cases, if you really listen, the answer will be there. You have to look at performance by what are people actually contributing? What is the value they're contributing? What are the decisions they're helping make? What are the deliverables that they're helping with? And it just raises the bar for managers to be more plugged in on how people are working.
Angelica, I want to shift over to the next category or the next archetype, the second category. How do disruptors differ from the quitters, which we actually estimate to take up about 11% of the workforce?
Disruptors are not only not pulling their weight, but they're negatively affecting those around them, yeah, because they're actively disrupting the organization. And that means that they are dissatisfied and they're uncommitted, just like the quitters. But they're likely to channel that frustration toward the organization instead of just trying to stay out of sight and quietly quit. And that is a quite dangerous dynamic to have, because they may be pulling other people down with them, especially groups that are still engaged or mildly disengaged, but really at the edge of disengagement and underperformance. So with this group, it's really important to understand what are the root causes of the disruption and of their dissatisfaction, and is there a possibility to turn them around? Because with disruptors in any change process, if you manage to actively turn them around, you can build great allies and actually people that are positively influencing the organization and engaging others around them. But if you don't, if you're not able to turn them around, they will continue to drag others down. And then the only solution you have left is to actively manage them out of the organization.
The disruptors, this 11%, they're basically telling us, I'm not doing the bare minimum. And the reason those people become disruptive is because the fact that they're not doing the bare minimum starts to surface, and other people are carrying their weight, are carrying their load. So the people who are productive and are working start to see that my workload is increasing because these other folks aren't doing their jobs. And yet they're just hiding out, not doing anything and getting paid the same thing I am. That is inherently demotivating.
Right, right. Another archetype that seems to have outsized influence, much the same way that the quitters and particularly disruptors do, the thriving stars. They account for about 4% of the workforce. These are folks who have an outsized influence, perhaps in the positive direction. So I wonder, Angelica, can you tell us a little bit more about the thriving stars?
Thriving stars are your truly distinctive performers in the organization. The thriving stars are about 4% of the average organization, but they just create over proportionate value for the organization. So by that, it is critical that both you keep them in the organization and you keep them engaged, and it's equally critical to not burn them out, because the thriving stars will also be the first ones everyone is running to when there is a new project or an additional initiative or something to take on, because they're the ones that are going to over-deliver. So to deal with thriving stars, it's important to provide great development opportunities for them, to give them the appreciation they need, to really care about them also from a leadership perspective, make sure they have a great connection with their manager and are offered the opportunities. But it's also important to kind of make sure that they are able to manage their own, let's say, their energy, right? And to make their performance, their overperformance sustainable, and to keep them happy in the organization at the same time.
Do you think it's easier to address the concerns or address the needs of the thriving stars?
From my perspective, it's easier to address the concerns of thriving stars, because on average, they come with an inherent sense of purpose, of engagement. They're highly committed, yeah, and they're willing to work both on the tasks you may give them, but they may be equally willing to work on other priorities, right? And you will also not have a challenge as an organization to find the next role for them, or to give them development opportunities, yeah, or to put them maybe in an even better context than they are coming from.
I think there's a different question we should be asking, though, which is, the question I have isn't how do we help those 4%. They're the ones who least need help. The question I have is, why is it only 4%? Why isn't it 40%? There's a whole group of people who are largely committed and productive, but nowhere near as much as the thriving stars.
Just to add a fun fact in our data was, you definitely are not going to get more thriving stars by calling everyone back to the office. Yeah. Because within the group of thriving stars, there is an over proportionate number of people that work remotely or at least hybrid. Yeah. But interestingly, in other groups, it's not the case that you can, especially when people are mildly disengaged or disengaged, it's best to have them work hybrid. You have to give your thriving stars and your high performers as much autonomy and choice as possible with regard to working model. But at the same time, others in the organization may need more connectivity to stay engaged, to benefit from a great leadership style by having at least a hybrid working model, yeah, where they can keep physically in touch with their coworkers.
It creates quite a conundrum for leaders and for companies. Because if you say, well, look, can we just let everybody be flexible and work whenever they want, wherever they want, and just have full flexibility? Broadly speaking, the answer is no. For most companies, that's a terrible idea. Mm-hmm. But then if you say, well, okay, should we have a policy that says you must come in 3 days a week? These are the days you have to come in. The answer is also no. It looks like, for the most part, that's a terrible idea. So then you say, well, now what do I do? You have to find ways to maintain flexibility and autonomy and get people working in person, collaborating in person in the right way, which actually varies by team and by role, and in some cases by individual. And how do you do that? Because if you let it be a free-for-all, it doesn't work. And I don't think we know the answer to that. I don't think there is a simple, easy answer to the problem.
The key message here is that your workforce is not monolithic, right? You have to recognize that you have different kinds of workers, different worker segments. Aaron, you raised a question earlier about what can we learn from the top performers. Should the goal always be to kind of move individuals up to the next level of the satisfaction spectrum? And I ask that because I always feel like the top performers, the thriving stars, you know, maybe they're workaholics.
I do think you could go well above 4%, right? I don't think it's unrealistic to think that it might be possible to get to more like 10 to 20% of your workforce as thriving stars.
We did look also at the reasons, right? Why are people disengaged? Why are they planning to leave the organization? And those reasons can be addressed at scale because that includes, for example, development opportunities that an organization offers to people. It includes creating a sense of meaning or a sense of purpose, that people feel about their task. It includes the leadership style that they're being confronted with. Yeah. They can be influenced very effectively. And just taking the example of the leadership style, also managers went through a quite disruptive, if not traumatizing period with the pandemic and the sudden change of the working model and a lot of remote working. And many of them have not experienced a lot of capability building, how to adjust their leadership style, for example. And that could have contributed to employees feeling less supported.
What are the economic and opportunity costs of disengagement and attrition?
If you have an employee doing a job and they quit and you have to replace them, there's a cost associated with that. There's also a cost to get them ramped up. There's also costs associated with low engagement. So there's been a lot of research out there on when an employee is less engaged, what is the productivity effect of that? And what is the knock-on effect in terms of what it costs an employer, either in opportunity costs or an actual cost because you have to hire more workers because you're not getting the productivity out of the ones you have. No matter what assumptions you pick, the cost is big. It's very big. And I think it's exacerbated by what some have started to point out is the hangover effect of the pandemic in terms of mental health issues, right. People feeling lonely and isolated, which I think is also part of hybrid and remote work. People are just not as socially connected in some ways as they used to be. And we haven't fully brought that back. At least most companies have not fully cracked this yet. When you have a lack of meaningful work, a lack of flexibility, a lack of career development and advancement, unreliable or unsupportive people at work, it drives people the other way. Whatever math you want to do, almost whatever assumptions you use, the cost is enormous.
There's one archetype that I need to ask about in particular, and that's the double dippers, who we estimate comprise about 5% of the workforce. These are people that hold two or more jobs. How are they managing dual roles and kind of getting away with it?
We have defined a double dipper to be an individual who holds two jobs, both of which are ostensibly full-time jobs. In many cases, not in all, in many cases, the employer does not know the person has a second full-time job. At first, this sounds sort of preposterous, like these people must be kind of quiet quitting and not doing the bare minimum at both jobs. And there are some of those, by the way. There are some. But it turns out that the double dippers are spread throughout all our other archetypes. I think part of what we have to realize is basic routine work where all you need to do is show up for 8 hours a day and be standing at the assembly line making widgets, that work is increasingly being automated. The work we need people to do now is increasingly creative, innovative, judgment-based, it has emotional labor, it has, and so it's not always about the amount of time you put in. Roberta, if you were going to buy a painting and you looked at two paintings, would you pick the painting based on which artist spent more hours painting the painting?
Not at all.
How would you decide which painting you wanted to buy?
It would be whatever appealed to me aesthetically.
What if the one you like had been painted in only 30 minutes, and you're like, oh my gosh, the amount per hour this person is getting would be insane. And look, this is an extreme example, but I'm not sure we should care how many hours people put in to deliver a product. If they delivered a great product and they could do it efficiently, why do we care? Right. And some people are finding that with hybrid and remote work, the amount of time they need to be in person collaborating with colleagues is only a day a week. And if they have two jobs and they have one day a week with one and one day a week with the other, that all the other work that they need to do, they can actually manage to get done. And some of them get done, like I said, some of these are getting done the bare minimum. Some of them are actually quite high performing at two jobs because they're that productive and they're that efficient.
Angelica, how do you deal with the double dipper? How do you appeal to them? How do you manage them effectively?
In many cases, the double dippers are starting to be less engaged, right? To not meet deadlines or to not be productive anymore. And the reason being that they may be overworked. And in that case, the double dipping may be a symptom of a need they're trying to fulfill because, for example, they're not making enough money. They need to hold a second job in order to provide for their family or other reasons. Yeah, but those are structural reasons that an employer has to take seriously and think about, are we creating the right conditions for our employees to be productive and successful and engaged?
If you have a double dipper who is truly high performing, you might say, is there another opportunity we can give them where you pay them more, you give them a bigger role, and you say, it's probably going to require more of your time and attention and focus and energy. Maybe this will be enough for you to quit that other job and spend all your time here. But if not, if you just want them to just keep doing a good job at the job they're in and they already are doing a good job, you might just let it go. So the first question, once you find that you have double dippers, and most big companies do, you might not know you have them, but you probably do, find out who they are. The next question should be, is it actually a problem? And my guess is the answer will vary.
Are there interventions that are common across all of these archetypes? Is it always all about compensation or about flexibility? Are there certain principles that cut across all of these archetypes that our listeners could pay attention to?
I think the most critical principle to start with is fairness. Yeah, so compensation should be fair, right? Working conditions should be fair. Unfairness is very easily discovered. And it's also very demoralizing for people. Beyond that, there's definitely a set of motivational factors that contribute to a good employer value proposition, which is driving engagement. And first and foremost, this is about providing good development opportunities for people, giving them a perspective in their career, perspective for advancement. It's also about effectively recognizing and rewarding high performance, which, by the way, is connected to a sense of fairness as well. It's important to also invest as an organization into a good and inclusive leadership style to provide training to managers, especially to lead effectively also in a hybrid work environment, yeah, and to provide the sense of connectivity, the sense of belonging, yeah, the sense of achievement to people. And last but not least, I think it's important to create this sense of purpose for people. And that is something that actually gained in importance, especially over the past years. And we do see it's especially important to the younger employees, the Gen Z, for example. And I do think it's one of the trickier things to do because it's not that easy. You have to figure out how do I create a sense of purpose to an individual? What is that that they care for? How does their work contribute to that? And how do I get them to understand that connection? Yeah. So this is something where you really need to listen, yeah, and to think about how to help people discover that intrinsic sense of meaning and sense of purpose at their job. But if you manage to crack it, yeah, there's definitely going to be a strong motivator for people.
When you look at the factors that drive disengagement versus engagement, at the top of the list are meaningful work and compensation. But there's three other factors that are very related. One of the three is, do we have a supportive network of people at work? The second is it a safe work environment, both physically and psychologically? And the third is it an inclusive work environment and a welcoming community? And the combination of those factors is actually higher, more important than compensation or meaningful work. And if you don't have that, I think people are going to find it difficult to get to that level of engagement that really helps drive productivity and performance.
Thank you both for a really great conversation.
Thank you, Roberta.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening to the McKinsey Podcast. I'm Lucia Raheli.
And I'm Roberta Fasaro.
Find us on McKinsey.com. We'll have a transcript of this episode up shortly.
And download the McKinsey Insights app, where you can find this podcast and other helpful content updated daily.
If you enjoyed the show, we'd love for you to leave a rating and a review.
We'll see you in 2 weeks.